Hello and welcome to the Winter of the Post podcast. My name is Jason McEwen and I'm joined by Tim Penfold and Alex Scott to talk all things Bradford City. It's been a stormy time for the Bantams with a series of dismal defeats that has darkened the mood amongst the fanbase. But with Chairman Stephen Rook promising to do more to address the club's issues, the arrival of David Sharp and 7 points from the last nine, is there a ray of hope for the future? We'll discuss the end of season landscape at Bradford City as they get set for another year in League 2. 12 players are out of contract in the summer and there are others who don't seem to be in Graham Alexander's plans. With the help of our readers, we'll discuss who might be offered the chance to stay at the club next season and who might be moving on to pastures new. And we've got your questions for Alex and Tim as well. And a big thank you for your contributions. We asked readers to vote in a survey for which players who are out of contract this summer you'd like City to keep or release, and we will go through the results of these as well as your comments over the podcast. So welcome along to Tim and Alex. Tim, I'll start with you. You've signed up for a season ticket next season. Great job. Well done. I imagine that as a thank you, you must have received that video from Graham Alexander expressing his appreciation, yeah?
I mean, I'll just check my emails, but I haven't got one yet. And I am worried that the club just doesn't like me criticising them, well, Alexander's tactics on Twitter.
You'll be on a blacklist, mate. You're not getting any nice emails from him anymore, or is this still this slagging off of the formation?
Especially not from Graham Alexander, yeah, definitely not.
Well, he's finally bowed to my pressure, the inevitable pressure of a social media campaign that got at least 10 likes and is playing Bobby Poynton.
Exactly.
I'm happy enough now.
That's what did it, I think, yeah. Alex, I mean, you live a fair distance away from Bradford, so understandably you don't have a season ticket and you go to games when you can. So I'm sure you haven't had an email from Graham, have you, thanking you?
No, I did. I did get an email. And it was nice of them
you
to send
did.
It. I did. And I think, I mean, I know the messaging and the words in it were thanking me for buying the season ticket, which I didn't buy. But I think it was a sort of message in solidarity and kindness, because they know I've been stuck on a WhatsApp chain with Tim for a month talking about Bobby Poynton. And it has been exactly what you imagine it would be. It's been that. It's been relentless. So I'm thankful that the club have taken pity on me and given me an email, even though I didn't technically deserve one.
Well deserved. For those of you wondering what we're talking about, basically the club last week sent out some emails to people. I think the plan was to send it out to people who renewed their season ticket. A nice video from Graham Alexander saying thank you, but it looks like they sent it to the wrong list and sent it to everyone who had not renewed their season ticket. And everyone who had renewed their season ticket, like Tim, didn't get a video. So a bit of an odd one there. And also, we've got to say, guys, what a video as well. You know, the picture of Graham Alexander looking like he was a hostage. The whole delivery was just amazing, wasn't it, really?
The only thing that's different from a hostage video is that he wasn't holding up a newspaper with today's date.
Excellent. Anyway, let's get into it. Fair to say, a troubled period for the club of late. A lot of things that have not been going too well, but things are just calming down a little bit. On the field, a slight resurgence in form. Tim, if I start with you, 7 points on the last possible nine, a bit of improvement last three games. Are you happy with that? What do you make of what's been going on of late?
We've recalled Poynton and we've started doing better.
Do you see?
Not a coincidence.
Do you see what we're having to put up with? Sorry, Tim. Carry on.
Yeah, because I've been proved right and that makes me insufferable, it turns out. We were really good against Tranmere, I felt. Pretty rubbish against Grimsby, where we tweaked the team away from the balance of the midfield that had worked so well against Tranmere. And the idea that we were getting extra height in the team to deal with Grimsby's set pieces, bit of a sort of not seeing the wood for the trees tactically, because making us a much worse team from open play meant that we were therefore much less of an attacking threat and conceded more set pieces. So even if we were a bit better defending them, we were just going to face more because we couldn't get the ball out of our own half. We looked better when we got our attacking players on, our good players on the ball on in that game. And then it was okay against Gillingham. A lot of 6 and 7 out of 10 performances mostly, you know, decent enough without being spectacular. Although Gillingham looked surprisingly flat for a team that was at least theoretically in playoff contention.
Yeah, and Alex, is it an element perhaps of performing when the pressure's off now? You know, there's nothing riding on it, so we're starting to show a little bit better performances. Or is it just, I mean, something you've touched upon before, that under Graham Alexander so far, we've had real wild swings of form, haven't we? Of, you know, some really convincing one-sided wins and then some really convincing one-sided defeats as well. It's quite it's extremes with Alexander, isn't it, so far?
It is. They have been battered, like, quite consistently under Alexander in a way that is a bit alarming. But some of it may be that I don't think they really had anything to play for anyway, because I don't think they were really in a playoff fight anyway when they were losing. I think sometimes they can get into a skid and they went sort of, what was that week, wasn't it, where they went Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, and they lost like 5-1, 3-0, 3-0, and you can get into a spiral, and that makes it quite hard. So even just an extra few days to try and clear their heads probably helped. I also think, and this is what we were saying, because I feel like in me and you, Jace, about a month ago, did one of the most poorly timed series of articles in the history of the website, and there's been a lot of them, but you and me did three articles over a midweek being like, you know what, they might have a chance, and then they proceeded to lose four on the spin and look absolutely terrible. But one of the things that we were pointing out is that their defence has been really, really good, and then a lot of those defenders weren't there, and then the defence became very, very not good, and then some of those defenders are now back, and the defence is looking better again, and it's all calmed down, which I think has probably got mostly to, like, Platt being back obviously makes a huge difference. Stubbs being a prolonged absentee, because he had a concussion, I think, which he's not come back from, which is
fractured skull,
which is
as
obviously
well.
Really concerning for him, but also him just not being inside didn't help. Tomkinson's been away on international duty. The backline that was doing so well, most of them left, and they've started to come back, and they've been a bit better. Kieran Kelly's form fell off a cliff without his sort of partners there, and it's sort of again come back now. Matty Platt's back, so I think there's something, and they've just got the players back, which helps. And as Tim said, they've just got much better. The defence has looked sturdier, and if the defence looks better, it helps the attackers play a bit more and play with a bit more confidence. They're not conceding instantly, which means they can play with a bit more freedom. So it all sort of fits together. But I think mostly it's just personnel. They lost Tomkinson and Platt at a really inopportune time.
Yep, I think that's fair. Tim, one development we've seen off the field over the last couple of weeks has been the arrival of David Sharp coming in as head of football operations. And we did have a few questions, like I say, coming through from social media, and one of them from Billy Bantam saying, do you think the appointment of Sharp will actually change anything? What's your making of his arrival at the club?
I mean, he was quite well liked at Mansfield, I think. I mean, he got the job at Wigan because his dad was the former chairman, realistically, but was there for a bit and then got the club sold on, although considering Wigan's ownership woes since, but that's a championship for you, selling to the right person who is going to throw 10 million, 15 million a year at the club and not get bored of losing money is a very difficult thing to do. Because Mansfield, he was director of football for about 4 or 5 months and then went to be CEO for about 3 years. And it does sound like things have got a little bit worse off the field there at that point, just in the way of organisation since he left, just from basically looking at the reactions of their fans. Be interesting to see how he goes as head of recruitment, because head of football, really, isn't it? Because does that mean he is in charge of hiring and firing the manager rather than Sparks, for example, and hiring and firing the head of recruitment and in charge of basically signing the squad and the coaching staff, right? That's what I think the role sounds like.
So a very quick part of history of David Sharp. As you mentioned, he was made chairman of Wigan in 2015 with the help of his granddad, obviously. Dave Whelan had owned the club for so long. He was only 23 years old at the time, so it made him one of the youngest chairmen in the world football at that point. And he left in 2019 when Wigan were taken over by someone else, and they went to Mansfield, as you say, first of director of football and then the CEO, and he left last summer. The interesting bit, spying through his Twitter feed anyway, as in terms of that timeline of when those events happened, it does seem that last summer he was quite involved with a lot of decisions that Mansfield made going into this season before he decided to stand down as CEO. So for example, he was involved with the decision to keep Nigel Clough, because obviously he was out of contract in last summer, and obviously that's paid off really well. And I think he was involved with 5 or 6 signings, again looking from his Twitter feed, that have obviously done quite well. So I think some of the success this year from Mansfield probably would suggest that he played a part in that, which has to be encouraging as well. Looking at it overall then, Alex, compared to 2 weeks ago after Harrogate, really things look incredibly bleak. Do you feel a bit more confident about things at the moment?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't really know anything about David Sharp, but I mean, to your sort of potted history, he's got some track record, I guess. I don't really know what a director of football operations is, but, you know, it's director of something to do with football, right? More people in the Brains Trust is probably a good thing, given the experience of the Brains Trust to date, so I'm all for that. And weren't they in like an 8-hour meeting on Thursday?
Apparently so, blimey. Oh, that wasn't a team's call.
Which you weren't a huge fan of, Alex, were you?
Well, I have a steadfast rule in my career that no meeting should be longer than 90 minutes. And anything that is longer than 90 minutes, anything that happens past the 90-minute mark is not going to be productive. But 8 hours, that's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive for a workshop. I guess they must have had the post-its out, I would think. You think they've got post-its out? Or do you think he might be like a Miro board, virtual whiteboard type of guy? See, I can't really see Alexander going for that. How do you think he'd have planned this meeting?
I can't see us having any sort of tech sort of modern enough to be a smart whiteboard, you know? We've only just moved on from chalk in the back room at City.
Definitely someone rushed out mid-meeting to get post-it notes, definitely.
Anyway, well, you know, whatever. More smart people involved in decision-making is probably going to be a good thing. So, yeah, why not? All for it. And one of the positive things that I would say, you know, and again, you're reading tea leaves, you don't really know anything. But there are many times over the past few years that they could have sacked Nigel Clough at Mansfield, and they didn't. And I think every time they didn't sack him, it was the right decision to. You know, they've had lots of like barren runs and where things have really been not going well, and they've stuck with him because he's a good manager. And, you know, he was probably involved in the decisions, and that's good judgment, I would suggest. So if you can bring some more of that into the club to sort of be less knee-jerk at times, I think that would be really positive. So, yeah.
Okay, good stuff. So let's move on then. Let's talk about the retain list. And I think it's quite normal for football fans, and certainly Bradford City fans at this time of year, to be looking at who's in that contract, who's out of contract, and start to have those kind of debates about who you would want to keep and who you'd want to get rid of. So we thought in this podcast we'd devote most of our time really to talk about that and the 12 players with some sort of level of first team experience at Bradford City who are out of contract and what might happen to them, and also some of the players who are in contract who may or may not be in Alexander's plans going forward. Now, when we came to plan this, Alex was very much the voice of reason, the sensitive guy in this one, and he said, let's watch our language this time. Let's not talk about get rid of, release and keep and all that sort of stuff, because at the end of the day, these are human beings and it's their livelihoods at stake, which is all great idea and very, very, very well thought by Alex. So we looked at trying to make the wording a little bit softer. So we talked about in jokey fashion about prolong the suffering, as in like for them, they get stuck at the club even longer than they'd want to be, or set free in a nice way if we do release them. So we thought that was quite nice. We did have a couple of complaints though, people saying that was still so a bit living sensitive, and someone said that we were disrespectful, arrogant and very demotivating to the squad. So, you know, we just can't win, guys, can we? I don't think.
I mean, I always aim to be like that in my feedback, right?
Absolutely. But so I just want a quick disclaimer. This is just a bit of fun, and we're idiots. We don't know anything. So honestly, don't take anything with today's gospel. I'm pretty sure David Sharp and Graham Alexander are not listening to this and making decisions on the back of what we think. So just treat it as that, please. Anyway, let's move into it. So start with the goalkeeping situation, and there's two senior players in the books at the moment. Sam Walker, who has a deal until the end of next season, June 2025, and Colin Doyle, who is the backup goalkeeper/goalkeeper coach, who is out of contract this summer. So as I say, we put the questions out there on a poll on the site to what people think. We had a really good response with just short of 1,700 people who have responded and given their votes. And Colin Doyle, very close really in terms of whether we prolong the suffering, as in keep him, or we set him free, but with 50.6% of people saying set him free. So looking at the goalkeeper situation as overall, Tim, Sam Walker, Colin Doyle, what do you think we should be doing in the summer there?
I've been impressed with Walker. It took me a couple of games to warm up to him, which means that I'm on record on this podcast going, I'm really not hugely convinced by him, and he followed it up with a month of absolutely brilliant form. So, you know.
Proof of idiots.
Yep, very happy with him so far going into next season as number one. Doyle as a backup, he's done absolutely fine in Nobody Cares Cup games, as long as he feels up to it physically, because my only worry is if Walker, say, got injured for a long time, would Doyle be up to playing week in, week out as the backup? But in general, I'm perfectly happy to keep him around as a backup keeper coach. It's just whether we need a third for those moments or not, whether he's going to be sitting on the bench all the time or just emergency cover.
Yeah, I feel like the shots fired at you, Alex, there from Tim by saying Nobody Cares Cup, when we all know how you love the Johnny Paint Trophy. Very important, obviously, isn't it?
The listeners are getting an insight into what our lives are like having to be on a group chat.
But for you, would you keep Doyle if you wanted to stay on?
I mean, if they get rid of him, they're going to have to replace two people, right? They're going to have to get a goalie coach and a reserve keeper. So if he wants to stay, you know, whatever, it's backup keeper in it, he's fine. I think Sam Walker's really good. So I think we talked when we got him that, you know, he would either be slotting into starting next season or good backup. But he's been much better than that. He's really good. So I'm like very happy with him as a starting keeper, happy with Doyle, you know, he's fine, whatever. So yeah, I'd probably keep them both.
Okay, so move on to talking about the fullbacks, and there's definitely potential for quite a bit of movement here because there's a lot of out-of-contract players here. Chiefly Brad Halliday, who is obviously on course to win the Player of the Season award, and he is out of contract in the summer. Liam Rydell, she's out of contract in the summer, having signed a one-year deal last year. Luke Hendry, the very much forgotten man who's on loan at Hartlepool at the moment, he's also out of contract in the summer. which leaves just Lewis Richards, who is still contracted to be at Bradford City for next season. And looking at the kind of the poll results of Brad Halliday, obviously, unsurprisingly, overwhelmingly, people want to keep him. 97.2% people saying to offer him a new contract. A couple of people have said on social media they don't necessarily fully rate him, but I think it's fair to say that most City fans think he's great. So, yeah, Alex, I'll start with you on that one. What are you doing with Brad Halliday?
Yeah, keep him if he wants to stay. I mean, I would be surprised. I mean, maybe. I mean, he's like, what is he, 28? I'd be surprised if someone from like a higher division would be coming in for him. But yeah, he's a good player. You know, he's been, even last year in his first season, where he wasn't as good in the first season, he was still pretty good. You know, he wasn't like a problem. So, yeah, no, I'd definitely keep him.
Yeah, Andy T had said in response to that on the Widford Post, read the comments, I would vote for 11 Brad Halliday's. What a fantastic work ethic, contribution week in, week out. On the opposite side, Tim, I think it's fair to say a bit more of a mixed bag, and probably one of the issues we've had this season is, do we have a convincing left wing back? And so the situation, obviously, Richards in contract next season, Liam Rygelj out of contract, 96.1% of readers voting to release him this summer. I would imagine you're probably going along with that as well.
I mean, I'd have released him last summer and kept Folds, but, you know, it's not even benefit of hindsight. I was saying that at the time. But yeah, it's definitely a season too far. He left the back three. He looked okay for a couple of games and then looked very much not okay for a few more games after. As wing back, he does not have the legs to get up and down. Not anymore. And he can't really run a whole flank by himself. And so while he is an okay crosser of the ball, he's either not getting into that position because he's too far back, or he's so far forward to cross that there's a massive hole behind him. And I think it was Crawley who exploited that one over and over again, the gap between the wide centre-backs and the wing-backs. So, yeah, I'd let him go. And Richards has promise, but I think I'd be looking at another left-back, left-wing-back for next season as well. It's a real priority to strengthen.
The challenge he's got as well is that if his role is like as a backup, you know, he plays here and there and sort of spot starts when the person's not there, you can sort of get away with him because it's good to have experience. It's good to have people who've been around for a while. You know, it's positive, and it's positive having more experienced heads in the team. But Lewis Richards isn't like a nailed on number one in himself, you know, at this point. He could certainly get there, but he's not there yet. And so you kind of need more out of the backup. You need someone who's going to be competing with Richards and pushing him. And that's probably not where Rydell is at this stage of his career, I wouldn't have thought. So I agree with Tim. I'm not sure I necessarily replace Richards, but you want someone to challenge him because he needs, he kind of needs to develop to the player that they want him to be. And I'm not sure Rydell is going to push him in that way at this stage of his career.
And one, obviously, a player who we have at the moment at the club who won't be here next season as it stands is Tyrick Wright, who played as left wing back ahead of Richards yesterday. Alex, is that something, do you think there's something there potentially? Because it doesn't feel, obviously, he's got a future at Plymouth, and he hasn't necessarily gone brilliantly here where he's going to have a lot of interest from other clubs in the summer, is he?
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, Plymouth play wing backs, don't they? So if they get relegated, which they might, maybe he may have more of a future there than we're giving him credit for. But I thought he did quite well. You know, Remy Hutton is like good. He's one of the good right backs in the division. And for the most part, I thought he handled him really well. Got forward. He was dangerous. Having someone come in after that with danger, I thought it was positive. I mean, he's obviously looked like he was a bit out of position because it's not his position. But, you know, you could give him a few weeks and see how he goes. He could certainly develop.
I mean, there's been a tradition over the years of converting hard running wingers. People, you know, wingers with possibly end product issues who work very hard into wing backs. And it's basically what happened with Victor Moses, most famously in that Chelsea team that used wing backs. How Ashley Young and Antonio Valencia moved backwards as well from winger to wing back to fullback and so on. So there's a pathway there, isn't there?
I think so. One of the challenges for him, I thought he did, the reason why I was more generous than I think some, because I think, Jace, you were quite generous of him in your match report, weren't you, and took a bit of flack for that. I think one of the challenges he had to play in that game, left wing back against a good right back, and then also had to go play right wing, cutting it, which is like two opposite ends of the field he had to play in the same game, which is really hard, you know, to then expect him to get any sort of consistency or good player. But I thought he did well. He certainly was persevering. If there was an opportunity to get him, I think I'd persevere with him because he's a good player, you know, and I think he does have end product. And I think that he does, as Tim says, there may be some ways that he could be flexible in the future. I'm not sure I would make him my starting left back. The loan spell hasn't gone as well as he would hope, as a club would hope, I think it's probably fair. But I think it's been a tough gig for him.
Yeah, and worth noting that it's a very different type of football now than what he played last year with Thrives, and that's a big thing. Finishing the fullback talk, Tim, Luke Hendry, 96.1% of readers saying that we should set him free in the summer. I mean, I think it's fair to say it's a real shame for him, isn't it? Because he seems like such a good character and one that will fill in everywhere, but it just hasn't been happening for Bradford City, has it?
To be fair, I think he's perfectly reasonable cover at this level, but keeping him around for another season as perfectly reasonable cover feels quite harsh for his own career, because he'd get, what, a couple of games as a covering wide centre-back, a couple of games at wing-back, if Palladay's unavailable, and even then we'd probably play Gilead there first. You know, he wouldn't get much in the way of time, so you may as well just... This is let him go for the good of his career. Let him go somewhere and play. Not fair to keep him at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to central defenders. Again, there's going to be quite a bit of movement, you would suggest, over the summer here. And we've got a few centre-backs on the books. Timmy Odesina, another guy a little bit forgotten. He's here till 2025. I think, Timmy, you were saying he was playing in midfield, wasn't he, for Wokeham, so maybe there's a bit of a career change going on there. Matty Platt is out of contract in the summer. Sam Stubbs is out of contract in the summer. Ash Taylor has another year on to go from here, and as does Kieran Kelly. And they've got John Tomkinson on loan. Obviously, he leaves in the summer. And we've also got new centre-back, I guess, Daniel Oyegoke, who is on loan till the end of the season and has been playing as centre-back recently as well. And we talked a bit about that in the match report in terms of interesting that he's playing all the time at this moment in time. So we'll come and talk about him in a second. But if we start with Matty Platt, on the poll we had there was, again, it was very strong in his favour, really. 81.2% of people saying that they'd like to keep him at the club. Alex, I'll start with you on that one. Is that something you would agree with on that one?
Yeah, I would. I'd probably say the one challenge with this exercise is we're taking all these decisions in isolation, right? I think there's a decent case for most of these people that you go like, yeah, no, they're pretty good. But then you'd end up with the same team that you started this season with, and then actually, is that what you really want? And so there's a question there, right, about how you want to approach this. I'd suggest you brought in Matty Platt a couple of years ago when he was 24. He's given you two pretty good years. You should be reinvesting him again, because, you know, at the end of this next contract, he'll be 28. He'll have had 4 years worth of experience here. You know, he'll have built up a sort of good bond with, like, these are the types of people you should be investing in. So I'd certainly want to keep him. I think he's good. I mean, you can definitely get promoted if Matty Platt's your number five.
Yeah, and on that point you're making about not going exactly the same team, Sam Stubbs is probably the other really key one. And on the poll we did, not quite as favourable as Matty Platt, but still we had 63.6% of readers saying that they would like to keep Sam Stubbs at the club next season. Obviously, some injury problems we touched about at the start, and that might be a concern as well, because he has a history of that as well. Is that one, Tim, where you look at it and think maybe that's one we've got to be a bit more ruthless about?
This is a difficult one, really, because some of it is, it's a little bit dependent on what system we're playing. Are we planning a back four or a back three, a mix of the two? Are we going to switch between the two and so on? But we made the playoffs with a very solid-looking defence with Platt and Stubbs at the heart of it in that run in the spring. And Platt, Stubbs, Kelly as three main centre-back options for a back four is pretty good. In a back three, you have some issues which are only really solved by getting in some extra pace, like Tomkinson or in recent weeks Oyegoke. But this is the difficult one. I suspect we will only keep one of Platt and Stubbs if we want to get some fresh blood in there, especially considering that we've still got the likes of Taylor under contract, who might be difficult to shift, even though he's not that good. So, yeah, I'm torn on this one. I think I'd keep him, but I don't think central defence is, you know, when we've got our first choice central defenders out, I think that's a pretty good defence for this level.
I don't think the defence is the problem. I would keep Stubbs. I mean, I wrote his, and I'm a bit biased because I did a lot of research on him last year for our Player of the Year article, whenever that was, Jace. I did the Stubbs bit. And you look across his entire career, in every division he's ever played any meaningful minutes, he's been, like, basically the best defender. And, I thought he was a bit poor this year, actually. I didn't think he was at the level that he was last year when he was playing for us at the start of the season. But that was in a new formation. And I take Tim's point. If we're playing a back three, I think him and Platt play the same bit of the back three, which is also the same bit that Taylor plays, who's probably going to hang around, which creates an issue. So if they're going to commit to the three at the back, I think you can justify not renewing him. But he's good. He's a good player. You can be good. You can get promoted with Stubbs at your centre-half. And so if that's the test, can we get promoted with him? The answer is yes, you keep him, I think. You know, because you brought him in at 23, he's now 25. You know, these are the players you should be investing in.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, and it's what you touched upon with Matty Platt as well. You know, Matty Platt is 26 years old, Sam Stubbs is 25 years old, Kieran Kelly is 25 years old. This is kind of peak years for a centre-back, isn't it, really? And we have, as you say, developed in them, and they're not players who are going to suddenly fall off a cliff in terms of their ability and their performances, because they're at that age, really, isn't it? So there is an element, as you say, of argument to say, let's stick with those people, actually, and build that team, build the team around them. With the other players who are still in contract, we've got Ash Taylor and obviously Kieran Kelly. I mean, I think it's fair to say Kelly has been good this season overall. He'll be fine for next season. Ash Taylor, I feel like there's no point asking Tim this question because we all know what Tim's going to say. So I'm going to ask you, Alex, what do you do about Ash Taylor at this moment in time? Because I think at times Alexander's played him and maybe shown a little bit of faith in him, but obviously he's disappeared for a while now.
If Ash Taylor is your guy who's backing up Wood of Stubbs or Pat in a back four, you know, he's your fourth centre-half, that's fine. He's, again, he's experienced, he's been around, it's good to have leaders in the dressing. Yeah, he's fine. If he's at the point where he's going to have to play quite a lot, again, that's where it becomes quite a problem. And realistically, I mean, there was a few comments were there about people saying, who are we going to like move on? You got to point out who is going to take on that contract, who is going to take Ash Taylor at this point on that contract? You know, probably nobody, without us paying most of it. And if you're going to pay most of it anyway, you might as well just keep him as a fourth. And the challenge becomes, it means that, as Tim is absolutely spot on, the challenge that they had at the start of this season is going to be their challenge again in the summer. If they're going to commit to three at the back, Stubbs and Platt and Taylor all play the same position in a back three, which is in the middle of it, which means you now have a gaping hole that you need to fill. If you play a back four, they can all play in a back four in some combination and they'd all be fine. So that will be one of the things I guess they'll be thinking about. And I guess the decisions they take over Platt and Stubbs may give you a signal on what formation they're going to commit to. To Tim's point, if they're only taking one of those on and they're keeping Taylor around, they're probably going to commit to playing a three. If you can keep both of them, which is probably what I would do, I'd probably flip back to a four.
But on top of that as well, Timmy Odesina has still got another year on his contract. I mean, that has not been a great signing.
You would hope we could move him on. He at least, I mean, we'd probably take a bit of a hit on wages, but you'd hope we could move him on with 1 year left at this point. There's no point, you know, last summer, the logical thing to do with Odesina when he wasn't in your plans was either change the system to a back three, which might give him an option, and he looked quite decent in pre-season, and then we just ignored him again, or get him out on loan, hope he has a good loan spell and his value increases, and either you've got a good option for the following season, or you've got someone who you can sell on, and neither of those things have really happened. So at that point, this is the point where you think, probably cut your losses, see if you can move him on. But yeah, if you're looking at bringing back one of our defenders out on loan, to be honest, it's got to be Finkers and Dawson. This is one of my frustrations with the Ash Taylor signing. It was predictably bad in the summer, and he's had 1,245 minutes in the first team this season. Would we have been in a worse position if we had given those minutes to Finkers and Dawson?
Yeah.
Because Taylor was making errors as well. It's not just, he's not a sort of, oh, he's a bit reliable but a bit slow. He's not like Nathan Clark was, where, you know, he was good cover but not quite good enough to start, but fine when called upon. He made errors that cost us against, what, MK Dons, Notts County, Crawley on the opening day. He had a daft red card, I think, against Forest Green. He, even in a game where it looked like he played, people saying, oh, he played well in that one, I think it was Accrington, he put one of their strikers clean through with an underhit back pass, and Lewis bailed him out. He's got a major error in him almost once a game, and that is a real problem. And that's why I just don't want to keep him at all. And Cousin Dawson was playing out of position for the first team as well, because he was a centre-back at academy level, and he's been a centre-back out on loan. And if we were signing, say, someone to play right of a back three, or in centre-back in a back four and be the fourth centre-back, a 21, 22-year-old kid who's had a couple of good seasons at National League North level would be considered a smart signing if he wasn't already on our books and people hadn't made up their minds about him. And it wouldn't surprise me if someone either in the National League or the bottom end of League 2, you know, Accrington or someone like that, who were needing a cheap young centre-back, go in for him at that point. And that would be frustrating if we let him go after that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens on that one. Obviously, Finkers and Dawson has been on loan for the season at Blyth Spartans, where he has, by all accounts, done really well, and he's been impressive there. On the poll, we asked, obviously, what people think we should do with him, and although 77.4% said he should be set free, that's still 22.6% people saying that we should look to keep him at the club, and which is, you know, one in five people responding to that, really. So it's still an interesting one, that one, isn't it, really? He obviously didn't have a squad number this season, so it certainly wasn't anywhere near Mark Hughes's plans, and you would expect him to be released, but who knows, we shall see. What probably counts against him is the fact that we do have these backup defenders on contracts to next season. And it definitely amused me just then, as Tim talked about Finkers and Dawson, that he somehow managed to get in slagging off Ash Taylor in his answer there. So even though I didn't ask him the question, he got it in there anyway, which is brilliant. I love that. Final words on centre-backs is John Tomkinson and Daniel Oyegoke, who, as we say, are on loan and will be expected to go back to their parent clubs, Norwich and Brentford, respectively. Probably unlikely we'd be able to keep Tomkinson because he looks like a player who can play at a much higher level than this. Daniel Oyegoke, as we talked about, he looks like he maybe have some sort of clause in the renewed deal we have with him to play at the moment, because he's certainly playing when you might not have expected it. But has actually been playing really well, and I thought he was really good against Gillingham at the weekend. Is that a player there potentially, Alex, that you may look at and think, well, there's a bit of a relationship there with Brentford and the player, that he might be someone if they could get him in the summer?
If you're going to play three at the back, then maybe you could talk yourself into it. To be honest, I think he's got a lot of potential. If he was our kid, I'd be playing him. If he's someone else's kid, I'd let someone else develop him. Given you've got a very solid backline otherwise, in a side that, in theory, is trying to get promoted, developing raw talent that's not your own, it's not really much in it.
I wouldn't try to extend the loan for just the reasons that Alex has pointed out. If Brentford were willing to say, let him go to us, I'm not sure if he's out of contract there, then he's probably not going to make it in Brentford's first team, is he? Let's face it, if he's not starring at League Two at this stage. I might be persuaded as someone who could, I don't know, cover for Halliday at right back, right wing back, cover at right centre back as well, or in a back four, just cover right back. I might be tempted, but at that point, again, I'm not 100% sure, because I think I'd would be tempted to renew Cousin Dawson. If you're playing a back three, then suddenly your right centre-back options are Cousin Dawson and Oyugoke, and at that point you feel like it's a bit fragile. You could only really want one of them as a fairly raw, youngish cover. So I might be persuaded into keeping him if we could make him our player and not just develop him for someone else.
Let's move on to the talk about the midfield. We'll talk about the more central players, which is more the defensive midfielders and the number 10s first, and then we'll look at the wide players after that. So we've got Richie Smallwood, who is out of contract in the summer. Jamie Walker, also out of contract in the summer. Alex Patterson, a guy who's barely played this season due to injury problems. He is contracted to the club till 2026. Alex Gilliard, who is injured of late but has had a good season, he's contracted till 2025. And we've got Kevin McDonald, who's also contracted till 2025. If anyone mistakenly thought he was out of contract this summer, that's my fault, because I wrote it wrong on the Whitford Post homepage squad list. So I think a few people are saying, oh, he's going this summer. He's not. He is a contractor next season, so apologies for that. The key ones there, I think, to talk about are Richie Smallwood and Jamie Walker, both being out of contract, and what they might happen on that one. And kind of really interesting dilemmas, I think, for both of those players. Let's talk about Richie Smallwood first, our beloved captain. On the poll, 76.4% of Whitford Post readers are saying to set free. So, yeah, let's start with you on that one, Alex.
Three out of four said they'd let him go.
Yeah.
That's a high figure, isn't it? I would probably try and reinvest that money in a more effective way. I think there are sides in which he can be a central part of it and you can get promoted, and I think there are sort of benefits that he brings to the team. I don't think this is that side. I don't think there are pieces around him that are going to enable him to succeed without major overhaul that I don't think they're going to be able to do. So I would probably try and reinvest that money in a different way. And I think if you look at the way they've performed over his tenure, they've been a bit underwhelming, and some of that comes down to leadership, which is him, right? So I would probably take my chances on another player in that position, I think.
I think the one thing with Richie Smallwood over the 2 years, you'd have to say, is that he just, for whatever reason, hasn't gelled with Bradford City supporters. There's something about the way he plays and his personality and the way he does go on the pitch and backs at people that just hasn't really sat right. I don't think with fans, whether that's right or wrong, and we always compare everyone in that sort of position to a Gary Jones or Stuart McCall, and it's not fair when other players are coming in on that. And I don't think it's fair to compare him to those players, but there is definitely something personality-wise that just isn't quite clicking, I don't think, with supporters. Before I ask you, Tim, for your view, there's a couple of comments we had from with the post readers. Ban Broview said, I'm one of the few who likes Smallwood, but it's arguable whether he and Gilly works for a promotion chasing midfield, so I'd reluctantly let him go. And John W, who argued to keep him, said, Smallwood is not the quarterback that we all hoped he was, I grant you that, but paired with someone who is, would free him up to do the things that he is good at. And I would probably just add that little bit of defence there to him, Tim, if when he's played the last couple of games, more of a just a ball win in front of the back four, and a back three, I should say, and then, you know, giving the ball to Walker and to Poynton, he's looked a little bit better, I would say, the last couple of games. And I think there's an argument to say we've mismanaged him for the best part of 2 years, as well as him maybe not delivering.
He was meant to be the Elliot Watt replacement, wasn't he? And he's a fundamentally different type of player, especially in a possession team like Hughes was trying to play. That role at the bottom of the midfield, where you pick up the ball off the back four and set the tempo, Watt was very good at it. He could speed things up, slow things down, had a good range of passing that Smallwood just doesn't have. And Smallwood's better off the ball, but he really needed someone. And I'll always say that Josh Cullen will improve any midfield, but he needed a Josh Cullen-like midfielder for him to be the sort of muscle for. So he'd kick people, win it back, give it to the guy next to him, who'd go and run the game. But that wasn't what we were paying a decent wage for what we thought was a championship quality player to run things, and he's not been that guy. partnership with Gilead really hasn't fully worked over the years. It only really looked like it's working in certain away games when we've not expected to lose the ball, where we can just use their off-the-ball qualities and spring the ball on the counter. But when we're dominating the ball, they're not good enough in possession. That's a big part of that. So either you pair him with someone like Ryan East or something like that, as it was last season, or you put Gilead alongside someone like Watt. But Gilead and Smallwood does not work.
This is a really good opportunity for me to bring out my updated 50% possession stat, which is the reason that you can. Because at some point, if you're going to be a good side in League 2, you're going to have more of the ball in some games. And in games where we've had more than 50% possession this year, we've had 21 games out of the 42, so it's exactly half the sample. We've won twice, won two games out of 21 where we've had more than half of the ball, and we've won 13 of the 21 where we've had less than half of the ball. And it's all down to, this is the heart of it.
It was, what, 49.7% on Saturday? We just snuck under the, possibly by letting him have the ball for the last couple of minutes, just to make sure.
They've just got to get under the line. If you can get under the line, you can win. And that's the challenge. You know, fundamentally, you've got to be able to win more than 2 out of 21 games where you've got more of the ball. And, you know, that comes down to someone at the base of midfield needs to be able to do something with it. And they've got McDonald under contract, who is good, but he's not going to be able to play every week. They've got Gilly under contract, who is fine, but he's not that player either. And so if you're going to keep him, you also have to find another player who can do what Tim's saying. I would be minded to get a guy who can do both.
I'd get two new midfielders in, to be honest. Let Smallwood go. Two new midfielders to go with Gilead and McDonald.
Yep. We shall see what happens to that one. It's, I mean, there's probably a question of his wage as well, which I imagine are pretty decent, bearing in mind he joined from Hull. So we shall see what happens there. The other one is Jamie Walker. Obviously, we're there again. It's a little bit contentious, mainly because the injury problems he's had over the last couple of years. He's not always been available, and that's something a little bit unsure about. And I think as well, when you look at the situation with Alex Patterson being at the club for another couple of years, what we never really got answered this season was, because they were never fit at the same time, is when you have Walker and Patterson, can you play them both, or is it one or the other? And if it is one or the other, who you're picking ahead of them there? So we've not seen that one there. But in terms of the poll of whether people think we should look to prolong his suffering, keep him here at the club or set him free, 80.70% voted to keep him at the club next season. So yeah, I'll start with you, Tim, on that one.
I think he's good. I think there's a good player there, and he's had a better season this season. He's a goal threat, he's a creative threat. Opta's sort of attacking threat model puts him in one of the best in the division, sort of top 10% of attacking threats in the division, when he stays fit. And that's why I would not trigger the option in his contract, and would just offer him a new one instead on a sort of a bit more pay-as-you-play, a bit more appearance-based and fitness-based. But I'd want to keep him, he's good enough. And he's had a good season, we missed him badly when he got injured and we decided to play Osadebi and Odwa there rather than, you know, Poynton. And in this system, I think this is the system that we were trying in the summer, this one we're playing at the moment with Smallwood and two people ahead of him. And that was meant to be Walker and Patterson, wasn't it? That was the plan. We tried the 3-4-3 because we lacked strikers, which meant that Patterson was playing deep and Walker was playing wide, which suited neither of them. Then Patterson got injured, then Walker got injured, then Patterson got injured and Walker got injured at the same time. And be interesting, but I'd like to keep Walker. I think there's something there.
Yeah, Stephen Jay on the comments on the Whitford Post article that we did said, even when fit, Walker rarely plays the full 90 minutes. No doubt in his ability and commitment, but it could be argued his luxury we might not be able to afford if we go for a leaner squad. And one slight interesting aside, Alex, on this as well, bringing in back in the David Sharp factor, is that David Sharp actually signed Jamie Walker for Wigan several years ago. I don't think it necessarily worked out that well, obviously, for Walker at Wigan, because he didn't last that long when he went back to Scotland. But that's an interesting dynamic, isn't it, in terms of David Sharp coming and going, looking at a player there who in the past he's got some sort of relationship with that maybe didn't go as well, what that might factor in as well. So if you're David Sharp and you're speaking to Graham Miles at the moment, what are you doing at the moment about Jamie Walker?
I think worst case scenario, he becomes the sort of foil for Alex Patterson and be his sort of backup, which might be the right answer, especially if you're only playing one of those sides. And given Alex Patterson's injury record this year, not in the past, but this year, you definitely want someone in his backup role who is able to play. So Jamie Walker fits the bill. Just quickly as an aside, Chase, while we're coming back to people who signed people before, just to point out to everyone, Graham Alexander signed Richie Smallwood when he was at Scunthorpe on loan in 2017. Yeah. So just keep that in the back of your minds. Walker, he also has a bond with the fans, the same thing that you were saying Smallwood absolutely doesn't have. He does have, so I would suggest keeping more people around who have that would be a positive thing.
Okay, we shall see on that one. And obviously, as we say, Ken McDonald is contracted next season as well, along as Gilead as well. Just one final player to talk about, just quickly, Tim. Freddie Jeffries, is he someone who you might think could come into the plan for next season?
When he was playing in the youth team, he was absolutely the type of player that we have been missing in our midfield for two seasons. He would sit deep and run games. And interestingly, at Elgin, he's been playing a more attacking role, slightly more attacking midfield. And I suspect that's just because they don't want to chuck an 18, 19-year-old kid in the most important bit of the team and make him run things. But it was like watching Elliot Watt in a youth game, you know? He'd just speed things up, slow things down, incredible range of passing, could dribble past people. But he's had injury issues, but he's got a lot of talent, and I would like to see him, you know, if we're looking at players who are going to break through and do what Poynton has done this season, next season, Jeffries is high up on my list, along with Noah Wadsworth.
Okay, look forward to next season when you've got the hashtag of Free Freddy before every game, Tim. I'm sure that's coming. So yes, in terms of the wide forward positions, we've got Clark Odwar, who's contracted till 2026. Adam Wilson, contracted till 2026. Poor guy. He's not getting a chance, and he's got another 2 years at the club, which is a little bit worrying if you're him at this moment in time. But then we've got Harry Chapman and Bobby Poynton, who are out of contract in the summer, and we've already talked about Tyreek Wright as well. So that leaves us really with Chapman and Poynton to talk about. Let's start with Chapman, because that's probably the one that is most contentious, I think it's fair to say. And that poll we did on that, it was really, really close to this one, which I thought was really interesting. In the end, 55.9% of readers are saying to set him free, but that's still 44.1% of people who would like him to be at the club next season. And I think, Alex, we'll start with you on that one. I don't get the feeling that Graham Alexander is a fan of Harry Chapman, bearing in mind the minutes he's had of late.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's barely played. You know, he doesn't really play. So clearly he's going to be, like, if you look at his league minutes this year, he has got fewer league minutes for us than Tyreek Wright. Tyreek Wright has only just got here and has got more league minutes than Harry Chapman has got. And obviously some of that's been injury, but he has been back now and he's just not playing. He's behind Poynton and clearly in the exact same position. I don't think Chapman's a bad player. You know, I think, I think if he's your attacking midfielder off the bench, you can get promoted. There was a spell last season, arguably, the bit where our promotion season under Hughes hit the rails was when he got injured. You know, losing him was the thing that sort of broke the promotion run last year at Swindon away. So, I mean, he could certainly play in a good team, but the rest of the squad means you just don't need to spend the money on that type of player, I don't think.
I think I agree. If you're playing him as an attacking midfielder, which is where he should be fitting in this system, where Walker and Poynton are at the moment, you've got Walker, you've got Poynton, you've got Patterson, you've got Odwar, and then you have Chapman. If you're playing him, he could go wide left. I think wide left is his best position, and we only really saw him fleetingly in it position. He's a good dribbler. But if you're playing wide left in either a 4-2-3-1 or a 3-4-3, Kavanagh and Young can play there as well. And they're a bit different. You know, if you're doing a 4-2-3-1, you'd have Poynton or Odwar on the right, who are both primarily creative. Walker or Patterson in the middle, again, primarily creative. Kavanagh or Young off the left is sort of the direct pacey goal threat that you need to support Cook in that system. So Chapman, who is, again, primarily creative, doesn't quite fit there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go elsewhere and do well, but I don't think we can fit him in at the moment just because of the way our squad is built.
Yeah, I'm going to say he, to me, is the classic type of player who will go to someone like Doncaster next season. Absolutely be amazing. And it's that thing, is it set up, isn't it? You know, go somewhere else is absolutely incredible, and we look back and why didn't we play him as much as we did? Why didn't we give him a chance, etc.? So, but we'll see. But yeah, I imagine it's very likely he will be looking for a new club in the summer. Bobby Poynton, Tim. I mean, here we go. We've waited for this moment, haven't we? You know, I can only imagine what it was like being near you in the cop for the Tranmere game when you scored that goal, and the smug levels that probably were radiating around for everyone around.
Jason, we can imagine. We can imagine what it was like, because I had to mute the chat.
Absolutely. On the poll, this one got the strongest reaction in favourable responses. 98.4% of people saying to keep him at the club next season. I think the rest of the 1.6% was probably Alex multi-voting saying no, just to annoy Tim, to be honest. But yeah, Tim, go on, there you go. Here's your moment. Go for it.
Everyone's already heard me go on about Poynton, and we can see it with our own eyes when he gets on the pitch. He links play better, he creates really well. Over the course of the division, looking at Opta's stats, if you look for people who are creating chances from open play, he is, of the people who played more than 900 minutes, he is second in the entire division for chances created from open play. He's also, you know, a bit of a goal threat too. He is, you know, he's a very dangerous player, and he's 20. He's gonna get better. So yeah, take the option to extend the contract and then turn around and offer him a new one with a long-term deal. Protect the asset that we've got. Keep him, build the team around him. Either he's good enough that we go up, or we can sell him for a lot of money and fund a promotion side that way.
It's weird his contract has not yet been extended. It is very, very weird.
I mean, we've got the option in our favour, though.
But even then, it's only...
But I'd be doing it. It's such an easy win, isn't it? To get the crowd on side, just go, yep, we are extending his contract.
Exactly that. Exactly. It's a really PR up and go, isn't it? We had BW tweeted in asking us about this. Was actually asking a question. Is playing Bobby Poynton either A, a last-ditch attempt to appease fans, or B, a last-ditch attempt to keep Bobby after some rumours he was moving up in the pyramid? And that's probably a fair thing to say, Alex, really, isn't it? Because there is probably that slight suspicion. Certainly one of you that Tim holds, we know quite strongly that Alexander maybe isn't Bobby's biggest fan and maybe doesn't rate him as much as we might rate him.
Well, and also he didn't see him when he played really well, right? He didn't see him at the start of the year when he was playing really well because he was managing a different club. And also, if you're trying to, you know, work out your best training, his first game he ended up at like Notts County playing like left wing back or left wing, didn't he? Got hauled off at half time and then it all sort of went down. He never replayed again.
He was our best player in the first half, though. The Sky commentators were saying how good he was in the first half when our defence was collapsing, and then he got hauled off to change the system to 3-5-2 and wasn't seen again for ages.
I mean, I would say the reason that he's playing is because there's less riding on it for Alexander, and he's probably been given some assurances, right? You can start thinking about what we're going to do next, and, you know, you would obviously play him. And also, he's good. So you and then they played him and he's done well. So he's just going to keep playing him because he's good and he probably gives him the best chance to win. If you mark all our players down on a list and you circle them, which would be the first names on the team sheet the minute, who's going to give us the best chance to win the next game? He's probably top five on that list. So I think that's probably the main reason he's playing.
Yep.
But also from Alexander's perspective, the pressure's off. I can understand why as a manager coming in, when you're trying to get promoted, you would rather put your faith in a 24-year-old or a 25-year-old in that position rather than an 18-year-old who's barely played. I can understand that. But now he doesn't need to worry about that. He's playing, that also makes sense.
So moving on to the striker situation, and I think this is where we've got a bit of a problem here, to be honest, because going back to what you said earlier, Alex, about the defence in terms of the decisions about the likes of your Platt and Stubbs, and it's overall to keep players, but if you really want to improve things, maybe you've got to move some players on to bring new players in who are better. And then we talked ourselves into saying basically let's keep the same defence because actually they're all really good at what they do, which makes sense. When it comes to strikers, we don't really have that option because basically every single striker we've got at the club is contracted beyond this season. There's only one player who's out of contract this summer, and that's Matt Derbyshire, who has been nowhere near the team all season or pretty much the season before that as well, after he signed in January of last year. So we're kind of in a situation where you want to improve the squad. You ideally want to go to your forward line, but we can't because they're all in contract. We've got, let's go through them. We've obviously got Calvin Calvinier, who came in January. He's contracted until 2026. I mean, he's done really well, so no complaints there. Andy Cook has two more years on his deal to go. Obviously having a goodish season, not a spectacular season compared to last year. Tyler Smith is contracted till 2026. Verdane Oliver is contracted for another season, currently on loan at Stevenage and has yet to score for Stevenage. Jake Young is contracted till 2025. Looks like he's going to miss the rest of this season now, so barely has played since he came back from Swindon and hasn't scored, obviously. So that just leaves Matt Derbyshire there, unless you can move players on. So there's a problem there, isn't there, really? And on Matt Derbyshire, probably no surprise to hear that basically everyone is voting for him to leave in the summer. 97.4% of people saying to set him free. And yeah, Tim, I'm guessing you're not going to argue with that decision, are you?
Nope, it's been a year too far for him. If we had signed him on a six-month contract in January 2023, and he'd popped up with a couple of moments, because he did pop up with a couple of moments, Stevenage, Grimsby, Carlisle, which was quickly overshadowed by a certain substitution. But if we'd taken that game to penalties and then gone to Wembley, Derbyshire would be remembered a bit differently. But then this extra year has done nothing for him. The most memorable moments for him are him looking utterly out of his depth as a lone striker and attempting to play a high-pressing system under Hughes for one game. And coming on as an attacking midfielder in, I think, can't remember which game it was that we were playing, but it was a Graham Alexander game, and he ended up playing attacking midfield when we still had Poynton on the bench, and we were just going, what on earth is happening here?
Neither of those are his fault.
I know, but it's a season too far. He wasn't really a serious option to start, and there's been a bit in the press about, why did Hughes change from a 3-5-2 to a 3-4-3 halfway through pre-season? It's because Oliver and Smith at that point were both injured, and all he had left was Cook and Derbyshire up front, so he switched the system. If he wants to go into coaching, potential vacancy, but as a player, no.
And Tim's absolutely spot on. He's he dragged us back into that game. You know, he scored that goal against Carlisle. That was a really big goal in another universe, which could have been, as I said, completely have changed the momentum, could have changed his confidence, could have changed everything, really, but just wasn't to be, unfortunately. And that, well, that's not his fault either.
It isn't, no. So what are we doing in this situation now with the strikers then? Because of looking through that, obviously Kavanagh, you definitely keep him. Jake Young, I think, bearing in mind what he did at Swindon, I think you're keeping him, definitely. There's a few decisions to make there about Oliver, Smith, and even Cook to an extent. What are you doing there, Alex?
I mean, Cook's got 2 years on his contract, so he's not going anywhere. Smith's got 2 years on his contract, so he's not going anywhere. Young, I think you'd want to keep, but I think he wants a new contract, rightly so. I can like totally understand, because he's going to be on the contract that we signed him on years ago, you know, which is not going to be much at all, given that he's just been, you know, basically the top scorer in the division for 6 months. So you have a decision about whether you sell or extend him, I guess, is the rather than letting it roll, because he's probably not going to be willing to work play under that contract. So I guess you keep him. I guess you keep Kavanagh. The challenge they have it. I mean, you're sort of stuck, and that's it. You know, you're sort of stuck with it. You might be able to spin Oliver out somewhere, but given what we've seen when Cook's not there, I don't know. You would? I don't think you would. I think you kind of like to have Oliver around, frankly.
You try and move Oliver on
and get a cheaper version of him. Yeah.
Get a cheaper version of him, because we don't need to be paying top end, top striker wages for someone to give Cook a breather at the end for 10 minutes at the end of games and fill in for him when he's not fully fit, so we still have a big man up front and we're not playing hoofball to Tyler Smith.
We have missed him this year, though. We'd have been better off if we'd have kept him.
When we tried Cook and Smith as a pairing, it hasn't really worked, in part because they both want to be the goal poacher. Oliver would work better with Smith in that way because he's more of a supporting target man. He's a bit more James Hansen than he is Andy Cook. He'll win his headers, sacrifice himself for the team and create chances that way. Whereas Cook was, you know, it just makes Cook worse playing alongside Smith because he's having to do some of Smith's running. Whereas Cook and Kavanagh, in theory, works a bit better because Kavanagh does all that running and stretches the play. Smith is weird if you look at his underlying stats, because he is utterly fantastic at getting into great goal scoring positions. His XG per 90 is the best in the team, and yet he's scoring at less than half his expected goals. At some point that's probably going to change, yeah, just through sheer regression to the mean, so he might suddenly start firing, but at that point I don't think it will work fully with Cook, because it just makes Cook less effective trying to have him as the supporting man for Smith. And when Smith's been missing all the chances, doesn't make the team effective. And he doesn't offer anything other than that. He's quick and he gets into good goal-scoring positions, but he doesn't run the channels, doesn't stretch the play, doesn't link up well, doesn't dribble past people. He's a pure poacher who's not been poaching.
No. And, you know, if you're going to play two up top, Young's ahead of him, Kavanagh's ahead of him. And I think ultimately with Young and Kavanagh and the wingers that we've got and Odwar and all these other people, you're probably going to end up with a front three next year with two wide men off the one, and then Smith is then a backup for a lone centre forward, which doesn't make any sense either. The one thing that will be alarming about Smith, I guess, is the Accrington game when they played Wright there. And that's like the only game that Wright really played up front, I think, or one of a handful of games he played up front. Actually got on to Cook, like worked well with Cook and scored twice, and Cook set him up a couple of times. It actually sort of worked, not against a very good defence, admittedly, but it actually sort of worked in a way that with Smith, it's not worked all season. It's never worked. You know, it should work, but it doesn't. They've got him for 2 years, right? He's not going anywhere. So either they're going to have to find a way, because Smith can't play out wide, as Tim says, because the only thing he does is sort of stand there and wait for goals. I don't know what you do. You're sort of stuck with them. They're like an odd couple.
I can see him going full Jake Young in terms of goals, yeah, next year, though, just because of those underlying XG stats. It's the sort of XG stats. The last time I saw this level of underperformance in the stats was Owen Doyle. And we know what he did.
Yeah. So what we're saying is it's likely next summer in pre-season that Tyler Smith will go and loan to Swindon and score 30 goals.
And score loads of goals. It would not surprise me.
Like, genuinely, that actually sounds like the most...
He's played there before, and I think he did quite well.
If you're ranking all the possible outcomes, him being on loan somewhere in League 2 and scoring 10 goals before Christmas is probably pretty high up there in my most likely outcomes.
Absolutely.
And then we recall him and he does nothing for us, because, of course, this is how it works.
It is indeed. So that's analysis of the squad situation going into summer. We will see what happens there, but it's obviously some big decisions to be made, and I think it's probably fair to say, certainly midfield, we'll see quite a bit of change. Just the final bits to do is just some of your questions. Thank you so much for sending them in. We'll start with one from Jonathan Holmes, who says, how important is it to bring in a real leader next season as we don't have one? Alex, I'll put that one to you.
If you look back over... like my life, Tim's life. Like, we've had 5 good teams, maybe. 88 with McCall, 99 when McCall was captain, 13 with Gary Jones, 15-16, that last year under Parkinson with Derby, who was captain, Vantilo was captain in 16-17, and they were good.
You're doing a disservice to Eddie Yowds in 96 by missing him out.
Good point. I accept that. Accepted. Criticism taken. But you know, if you look at all the good sides that we've had, they've got a good captain. If you indulge me for a couple of minutes, since Vantilo left in the summer of 2018, our captains have been Josh Wright, Anthony O'Connor, Paul Caddis, Hope Akpan, Pordy O'Connor, James Vaughan, Clayton Donaldson, Richard O'Donnell, Lee Novak, Pordy O'Connor again, Richard O'Donnell again, Niall Canavan, Pordy O'Connor again, and then Richie Smalld. These have been our captains over the last like 5 years.
Wow.
Richie Smalld has been like a qualified success out of all of those, but that's it.
I mean, Pordy O'Connor, I think, could have been a captain in a good team, you know?
Yeah, but he wasn't. He was a captain three times in three separate terrible teams. But I'm not sure that was entirely his fault, because he is now in the towards the top of League One. But, you know, they are. I mean, like, Hope Akpan was literally appointed captain in something that I've completely jettisoned from my memory. That was like an actual thing. Wow. But they are. We have had a series. We've got no... Ever since Vantilo left, we went for 6 years where our captains were Jones, Derby and Vantilo. And then the latter 6 years, we've had that list that we just talked about. It's been a dire strait for leadership here. You know, we have been desperate. And the ironic thing is, Josh Wright, Anthony O'Connor, James Vaughan, and Richie Smallwood were all brought in to be leaders. They were brought in and installed as captain, like, instantly. We've tried. We've acknowledged that this is the thing that we need to try and do. But that is four in a row, arguably with Smallwood as a qualified success, but it just all failed, all completely failed, and just been in terrible teams. So it's absolutely pivotal that they get a good leader, but it's not through want of trying. they have literally tried. They've signed four starting captains over the last 6 years, and just none of them have worked, really, apart from one, maybe.
They've got to be a good player, though. That's the problem. One of the issues I think people have had with Smallwood and his leadership is some of his leadership has been, I do everything. And then that means you've had Smallwood on set pieces when Chapman or Wright or Walker would have been better options. That makes people trust him less as a captain as well. Because if that's, you know, I'm the captain, so I'm doing everything, but you're not the best person in the team to be doing that.
If I was doing it, when we signed Gary Jones, he had been captain at Rochdale for 8 years. And in that 8 years, when he joined them, they were 21st in League 2. And when he left them, they were like towards the top of League 1. He clearly been captain, the most important player in a team that had got a lot better over a long period of time. Trying to search around for 20 minutes on Google earlier of players who sort of fit that profile. Ollie Clark at Mansfield is captain there. He's playing mostly off the bench this season because he's sort of been phased out of their team. 31 years old. They're about to get promoted. Odds are he's probably not going to get re-signed there. He used to be captain at Bristol Rovers when they were good. Somebody like that who has leadership experience in good teams would be really valuable. Somebody like Ollie Clark from Mansfield in central midfield would make sense, I think. That would be something I would be starring if I was Graham Alexander on my sort of recruitment list, somebody like that, just someone with experience of leading a good team.
Let's hope he was mentioned in that 8-hour meeting then, because obviously David Sharp will know him well, won't he, sir? So, yes, we shall see. Speaking of David Sharp, Ian Hemmings asks, if David Sharp is talking about a long-term strategy, should we start to build a squad around our promising youngsters like Poynton, Wadsworth, Jeffries, Hadidi, Ibbotson and the likes of Richards? I'm going to ask this question to Tim, but I think we all know the answer that's coming here. But go on, Tim.
I might surprise you and say that the time to do that is when we're in League One. We will never get the patience from the fan base to do a long-term strategy in League Two, not properly. The only time we've ever looked like we might do it is in COVID when there were no fans there. And then we scrapped the strategy at the end of that season and went straight for Derek Adams and didn't build around the promising players that we had when we probably should have sort of at least kept with the strategy, even if we wanted to change the coaching sort of team. But in League Two, we will not have the patience to blood a whole, you know, half a team of youngsters, much as I would love us to do it, because we are expected to be contenders. And if you blood the youngsters, yes, in two or three seasons, they'll be great. But you will not get the patience to do those two or three seasons. And then you'll change strategy and it won't work. If we can get ourselves into League One, that is the time to sort of go, right, here's a core of young players we can build around. As long as we just don't go down, we can then start building and pushing. But League Two, it's much more difficult for us to do it just because there will not be the patience for us to do that.
And the only other thing I'd add, Jace, is we've signed 25 people permanently since the beginning of last summer. Seven of them have been over 30. I think, if anything, they kind of needed more old heads. I mean, I think the manager pointed out himself, but in Grimsby, we had three people over the age of 26 who played out of 15. You know, if anything, at the minute, they kind of don't have enough people who've been around the block a bit.
the likes of Platt and Stubbs can grow into those.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
but again, that's the long-term plan thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Billy Banter had asked, what are your predictions for when the lease is up at Valley Parade and do we look for a new home? Now, just a note on that one, I have actually written an article about the Valley Parade rental situation. It's quite a long one, I warn you. And we're going to put that up after the Salford game a week on Monday, so look out for that then and they'll answer some of those questions then, because we have had quite a lot of questions from readers over the last few weeks about that situation, especially after Stephen Rupp's open letter he did. We had some of the great questions, which I think we've covered over at some points over the podcast, so we won't go through them again, but just as a final question for both of you from Michael Brett. I cannot shake, crazy I know, that Kevin McDonald should play as centre-back, e.g. similar to Malish, his conversion at Carlisle with him being the ball-playing centre-back that we've craved. Do Alex and Tim have any other crazy tactical innovations for the current squad?
I've been saying for years that Gilliard is in mid-transition to becoming a sort of wing-back, and he sort of did it. He sort of got there. He sort of played a bit of left wing-back this year and looked really good, so I feel like my idea's been taken. Gilliard is a sort of bombing up and down wing back. Feels like his destiny. He's going to end up there eventually, I think. That makes loads of sense to me. Tim, did you have any other smarter ones than that?
I mean, to be fair, I've been thinking Gilliard as a wing back since about halfway through that first season when he came back. Because as a winger, his big issue was complete lack of end product. But he was good off the ball with his defensive work and he could bring the ball up the pitch well. Both attributes that you want in someone playing just a little bit deeper, but not being the main creator. So, wing back. On the subject of converting wingers into wing backs, we should try Adam Wilson there.
Good one.
I would quite like to see what would happen if we tried Adam Wilson there, just because there is a bit of a thing at left wing back. Richards is okay at best going forward. So, I mean, we're trying Tyreek Wright there at the moment. Beyond that, I'm not 100% sure, because I think most of our players are sort of in the correct positions, as it were, and the one weird thing we've tried has been Oyegoke in midfield, which very much hasn't worked. I'm not sure if there's...
Tried Matty Platt up front for that 5 minutes. Got some work there. Spare big man.
Well, I was going to say, this is my tactical innovation idea, which mainly is just because I'd love to just to see Tim's, how angry Tim would get, basically. But I'd love to see Alexander next season go full Peter Taylor and play Ash Taylor up front. That would be amazing. So let's do it. Come on.
If he makes a mistake there, it's not sending someone clean through, I'll tell you that, Jace. He's going to insulate him. Get him as far away from the net as possible.
Let's get it done.
Tell him to think he's defending for the opposition. He might create chances for us.
I'll tell you what, next season when we're losing 2-0 at home to Accrington at the end of September and we've got Ash Taylor and Verdane up for Oliver at front at the end, Tim's head's going to explode.
Absolutely. And Bobby Point not on the bench even. That would be just for you. Let's look forward to that. Okay, that's all we have time for that one. Thank you so much for Alex and Tim for your contributions. Thank you to everyone who voted in our poll and also sent in their comments. And thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. We are hoping to be able to do one more podcast when the season ends, just to reflect on the season and look forward to summer. It's just whether we've got the energy to do that, because it's been a bit of a tough season and who wants to relive it even if we're still living it right now, but hopefully we'll do that. But as ever, thank you for your support and we will see you soon.